the Comic Source Podcast. I'm Jace. Manny will be along in a little while. He's running a little late, so we're going to go ahead and start the episode without him. I do have a special guest on for this episode. I'm going to play you a little bit of music here, and maybe you'll be able to guess what the episode's all about. That's right. It's our Rogue One review. And I'm joined by a coworker of mine, Mark. He's a big Star Wars fan. I met Mark. It wasn't too long before Star Wars was a topic of conversation at lunch. I thought he would be
absolutely
perfect one to come on and share his thoughts, get sort of a different perspective. So, Mark, let's hear your Star Wars background. How did you start out? How old were you? First movie you saw? Give us the earliest Star Wars memory, the whole spiel.
Oh my goodness. Well, clearly I was raised in Dallas, Texas. So if most of you understand that Dallas is hot, Phoenix can be hot too. My earliest memory is of Star Wars is, standing outside the movie theater and in the summer of 77 in Dallas, there was basically one movie theater to a certain extent. You had your dollar theaters, but the North Park 1 and 2, and at the time, Star Wars had occupied both theaters, and they were the largest grossing theaters in the Southwest at the time. And I was 8 years old, and I stood out in a line with a bunch of hippies and a bunch of freaks, and I, with my best friend Craig, and we saw this movie on the screen that I was completely enthralled with. This wasn't Star Trek. This wasn't 2001 A Space Odyssey. This is something that just reached out from the screen to me, grabbed you, and pulled you in. So I have a little bit of a streak going that JC and I talked about. That was my first exposure. And then, you know, that was a couple of months into the release of Star Wars. So, and that's obviously episode 4. And starting with episode 5 with Empire Strikes Back, I have seen, and last week was a continuation of that, that I had seen every single Star Wars movie release on its opening day, going back to The Empire Strikes Back or Episode 5.
That's pretty impressive, I have to say.
It was difficult. There was a lot of pain and gnashing of teeth in the late 70s and early 80s with the parents, but hey, you know, ate my vegetables and mowed the lawn.
Did what you had to do. I find it fascinating that as big of a city as Dallas is, there was only basically one or two movie theaters even back then.
Well, there was a lot of movie theaters, but a lot of the movie theaters back then in the Dallas area, especially I grew up in North Dallas, and you had the neighborhood theaters that were at that point, they were still second run. But if you ever wanted to see a good movie, you went to North Park 1 and 2, and they were the biggest, they had the best air conditioning, and you were, you know, these were the days of vinyl seats and all that sort of good stuff, so you were sitting on top of someone else. But that's the memory that I have, and I probably, that summer of 77 going into the summer of 78, I realistically kind of fought back and figured out exactly how many times, and in a year I probably saw it about 17 times.
Wow.
So that's, you know, you draw that out and that's basically once every 2 weeks. So that so that goes a little bit to the extreme.
Now, did you have the toys and all that stuff too?
Oh God, I still have the toys. I still have for those of you of a certain age, if you remember the Darth Vader carrying case, I still have my Darth Vader carrying case.
Oh, we used to have
I think we got rid of it. Yeah. Absolutely. I had a Millennium Falcon, which is sadly gone to the dust. But I still have a number of the characters. The Ben Kenobis, unfortunately, you know, just as a kid, they get treated So I don't have the vinyl, I don't have the plastic capes, and I don't have the plastic lightsabers, but I still have them. So I'm still proud of that.
Well, that's cool. Yeah, I don't. We didn't have a Millennium Falcon. We had the case. We just had a ton of figures. I had a land speeder. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they, you know, burying them in the flower beds and plane and whatever. Yeah, they're long.
Oh yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Had the land speeder too. I think I've probably gone through all of them. And I have a rule that if I have two children now, and they're very interested in Star Wars, but I don't let them touch my figures. I have my office at home, so they know that the figures are not allowed to leave that office under penalty of death or no TV, whichever is greater.
Yeah, I remember I had the Dagobah playset too. That was cool.
I didn't do that one. So,
my memory is seeing Star Wars during the summer. You know, okay, so. Mm-hmm. The original Star Wars, May 25th, 1977, was the original release date. I saw it. So I was only, 3 years old when mm-hmm. that came out. So, but I do remember going to the drive-in and seeing it that summer. I don't remember much of the movie other than I remember the attack on the Death Star scene. Because I remember every time one of the X-Wings would fly into the little trench and go down, I remember as a three-year-old thinking, why do they keep going into that trench? The other people don't want them in that trench. They shouldn't be going in that trench. It's dangerous in that trench. That's my earliest Star Wars memory, and I don't remember much else until opening presents that Christmas and getting some of the figures. Hammerhead and shiny C-3PO and some of that stuff. So that's my earliest exposure. And then of course us being and this is something that we talked about last December when we did the Force Awakens review with some of my previous coworkers. They're all a little bit younger, and they always had Star Wars was always available to them. It wasn't mm-hmm. like that for you and me.
No,
you know,
correct.
I mean, there weren't even VCRs for, you know, until I was like in my teen years. And even mm-hmm. then, Lucas didn't release the Star Wars films for a long time. It was a big deal when they came out on VHS.
And I was, unfortunately, my brother, when the VHS started coming out, he actually worked at Blockbuster. So he got me the deal on all the early releases to a certain extent.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, Star Wars fans now, you know, kids in their, like my son, 21, Star Wars was always there for him whenever he wanted, you know, whenever he wanted to see it, he could go, you know, get the VHS or get the DVD or stream it or whatever. It was always there. They've grown up with it. It's always been there. They can't really remember a time before Star Wars.
And right, I can't exactly.
Really, I can't really either, in fairness, but I can remember when it wasn't available. As much as I would want to watch it, it wasn't. Mm-hmm. There. And so I do kind of wonder if just the nature of the way media has gone, I worry that it makes it less special. I worry that Disney is trying to make this huge franchise with one or two Star Wars movies a year, you know, too much of a good thing. I mean, even this year with Rogue One, there seemed a lot less hype because, well, we just had a Star Wars movie last year. And you wonder,
correct.
You wonder if they had been flip-flopped, if they'd done Rogue One last year and then Force Awakens this year. I think Rogue One would have gotten more hype because it had been such a long time since Episode 3 had come out. But then I think Episode 7 still would have got a lot of play because it was a continuation of the original story. All right, well, Manny has joined us. Let's catch you up, Manny. What's your first Star Wars memory, your Star Wars background?
Well, to be honest with you, my first Star that I can remember, to be honest, is I know I watched the previous films, 4, 5, and 6, somewhere when I was younger. But the only thing that really stands out to me was when Episode 1 came out. Just because of how big of a deal that was.
That's it. You're off the show.
What happened?
I said, that's it. You're off the show.
I was born in 88, all right? So you know, there's a, you know, although it does, whatever, my parents obviously weren't very nerdy with most films like that. So not a lot of Star Wars in my house. And so, that first weekend and Madness, and just seeing how cool like Darth Maul was, and young Anakin and things not really make then those other films, and it wasn't until after that I really got kind of into the Star Wars. Although I'm not the biggest Star Wars fan, I like it fine, but I wouldn't necessarily consider myself a fan like some of my other friends, because they would lynch me if I called myself a real Star Wars fan compared to them. I mean, I have friends who book their tickets for like Star Wars festivals 2 years in advance. You know, it's insane. They, you know, dress as Jedis and I'm definitely not at their level. That's about it. I mean, it just now recently is really when I'm interested in storylines and character backgrounds. I've read a couple of the books, obviously all the films, and then the Clone Wars television show, and you know, whatever I can. Oh, the comic books, most of them, just whatever I can stick my teeth into.
So when you say books, you mean some of the novels?
A pair of Star Wars. Yes.
Okay.
And so, yeah, that's about it.
Let me ask you this. Being that Phantom Menace was the first one you saw, you were 11 at the time, right? You said you were born in 88, so that came out in 99. So was it the pod race? Was that, or were you a little older, so it was the lightsaber battle that really sucked you in?
You know, Darth Maul taking out his lightsaber. That was cool. That battle with Qui-Gon Jinn and Obi-Wan is probably my favorite in any Star Wars. That includes Luke versus Darth Vader.
All right. So, what's your favorite of all the films, including Rogue One, up to and including, if you have to pick one?
It's between Return of the Jedi.
Sorry, you cut out right then. It's between Return of the Jedi and what?
A New Hope. So four and six.
Wow, that's not a popular answer. In fact,
you know what? I'm just gonna.
That's fine if that's what you feel. It's your opinion.
But it is for me. A New Hope. That's the definition of Star Wars for me, but I mean, Return of the Jedi. The scene in Tatooine with Jabba, I love that, those scenes. Lando and the Millennium Falcon, you know, things like that. Just always favorite in Star Wars.
You know, Brad Walker. Last weekend, right before the Rogue One came out, he was talking on Facebook. And Brad Walker is a comic artist, Mark, someone that Manny and I know. I know very well.
Got it.
Mm-hmm. And he was saying he often watches movies while he's drawing. And, you know, of course, Rogue One was about to come out, so TNT or TBS, whoever has the rights to show them on broadcast TV, was showing marathons, showing all the movies, and he's a big, you know, he's around our age, big Star Wars fan, so we'd always watch him. Mm-hmm. And his contention is that Revenge of the Sith is the worst one. It's just, like, terrible acting, stories, you know, thrown together and blah, blah, blah. But so anyway, he put up on Facebook, he's like, I think this is the worst one. What do you all think? Let's hear, you know, because obviously a lot of his friends are on Facebook are comic artists and comic writers and comic fans, and so a good cross-section, many people that have spent a lot of time and energy in the Star Wars universe. And a lot of them said episode 3. There were a few episodes ones. I even saw someone who made a case for Return of the Jedi. So it just, when Manny mentioned it as his favorite, it just made, and I think that there is a certain element, a certain faction of Star Wars fans that it is the worst of the original three, and for them, it, they'll always put it up there as one of the worst because of the Ewoks, which many felt was Lucas kind of selling out to the whole commercial side of things and, you know, making it them cute and cuddly so he could sell a lot of stuffed animals. So
nothing wrong with the Ewoks.
I don't know if that's true or not. I personally don't think that Return of the Jedi is in the bottom. I think all the prequels are worse.
Definitely. Agreed.
So that I don't subscribe to that. My favorite is 4. It's a close call. Empire Strikes Back, which a lot of people cite as the best one, is a close second for me, but there's just that classic feel. And for me, you know, when I finally got a chance to watch, because I mentioned, Manny, that I was 3 years old when I saw it the first time at the drive-in, so didn't have a lot of memories of it, and it wasn't until years later when it was finally released and readily available for me to watch again. I was probably 11 or 12 at that time, and being able to watch that, and I had such a great appreciation because I knew it was a movie from 1977, but it didn't look like it was a movie from 1970. I had seen in the infancy of VCRs and VHS, there was a little video store that was like 4 blocks from our house, and my brother and I used to ride our bikes down there and rent these 99-cent movies like all the time. Like every day during the summer, we'd go and rent one or two movies. I can't tell you the number of B science fiction movies and fantasy movies that I saw because we'd go down there every day. We pretty much watched every movie they had at some point. And the special effects were always so terrible. And so finally seeing Star Wars, you know, and realizing what a feat, what a cinematic milestone it was, I had an appreciation for that. And so for me, A New Hope, or to me, that's Star Wars, you know, they changed the name later and all that stuff. But yeah, that's, for me, that's it. Number 4.
Mm-hmm.
Or the first one that was released. What about you, Mark? What's your favorite?
I'm going to break with tradition to a certain extent, but 5 is my all-time favorite because you have to look at it from, at least from my perspective. I have a son. I have 2 sons, and I look at them. I am your father, and I don't say like, "Hey, I'm your father." I say, I am your father. So he took a cultural, it took that sentence and it's been turned into a cultural lexicon. Followed very closely by 4, followed by a certain extent, you know, again, for the, what we've just talked about, the Ewoks into a, you know, and, okay, so somebody tell me how they were able to get the big, at a moment's notice, get the big logs up in the trees to crash the AT-ST. 7 is very high on my list. At 1, 2, 3, it really doesn't matter to me. My sons, who are 7 and 5, just like you said a few minutes ago, Jace, was they could watch the pod race over and over and over for an entire day.
Mm-hmm.
I go back, it's 5, because to me that is the one movie that created an icon. You know, Darth Vader was always a villain, but I still think that was probably one of the greatest plot twists in the history of cinema. I am your father. 6 and 7, to be honest with me, are interchangeable. 7, I think, is a remake to a certain extent of 4.
Yeah, I agree.
But 6, the Ewoks, I'm like, okay, we're trying to sell stuff now. So that's the way I look at it. Yeah, thank you very much.
I kind of feel like, and if you go back and listen to our podcast of the review of Force Awakens, I almost feel like 7 was a remake of 4, 5, and 6, like all like melded together with the whole, you know, father son dynamic, with the main hero being found on a desert planet, a Millennium Falcon. Mm-hmm. It's interesting how they chose to do it that way, for good or bad. Well, let's give our initial impressions of Rogue One. Why don't you start, Manny? Give us your just maybe one or two sentences.
Oh, gosh. Please don't make me go first.
Yeah. And a ranking of between 1 and 10.
Oh, you're going to make me go first. That's terrible. How do I put this? It was okay. I've been thinking about this for the past 2 days on how the heck I was going to explain my reaction to Rogue One, because it was kind of another film. I share the sentiment of some friends that I talked to that it kind of loses a little bit of its flair just because you know what's coming and you know that a lot of those characters can't make it, so you can't necessarily become too attached. not much to really expect. I mean, the one thing you could probably expect the most are cameos and Easter eggs, things like that, that a lot of times should be secondary in a film. And because of that, it almost got boring at times. Not to say that some of the action scenes weren't great or anything like that, but even in 7, where it was kind of following the script before, you have something to look forward to. You have characters to kind of follow. In Rogue One, it was kind of a one and done. And because it was kind of missing that force aspect, I felt, even though some of the characters, you know, claim to believe in it, but, you know, not much of it. I kind of felt that it lost a little bit of that Star Wars
magic
luster that I'm I'm used to seeing in throughout all the movies. I mean, it is what it is. It's kind of a fill-in movie, and so and it doesn't help that I'm a big fan of some of those actors. So it was nice. It wasn't to just see them die, but you saw it coming because they can't really go on. And I think the one thing that bugged me the most was at the end with Princess Leia, when they did the 3D animation of her. Like, I didn't think it was necessary. Just show the back of her head. It was enough. Which then, actually, the next day, I went to watch Episode 4. And it really creeped me out how close to the real thing he looked like. Because he's just so, like, creepy looking facially. So, with that, kudos. But
so what's your number ranking from 1 to 10?
From 1 to 10, I'll give it a 7.
I gave it a. It's so funny how we rank, because, well, I'll go next, I guess. I'll give it a 7 also, but I give it a 7, thinking that 5 is, you know, an average film. 5 is kind of a meh, and you kind of made it sound like it was meh, but you're giving it the same as I am. And the reason I give it a 7 rather than, like, for pure entertainment value, I'd probably give it like 8.5, but I got to bring that down a little bit because there were things about it that bothered me, and we'll get into that when we talk about the flaws in the film. But yeah, I'll give it a 7. My overall impressions: it did feel like it was two different movies, and I've talked about this with some other friends. That, you know, the first hour kind of felt like it was thrown in there for like the really hardcore fans that want to see world building beyond the main story, because you have to realize that there's levels of canon in Star Wars. You know, that George Lucas, anything that appears in the films is like written in stone, and then anything that he's approved of, like the cartoon and the current Marvel comics, are like on the next level, and on down and on down. And so anything that happens in the movies is so important, and it matters so much. And because they threw out so much continuity and so much history and so many of the stories when Disney acquired Lucasfilm, you know, like the whole 20 years of Dark Horse Comics are now kind of like optional as far as do they count or not. And so when you put something on the big screen, it matters so much because it counts the most. And so I feel like that first hour was a lot of, because it jumped around from place to place and mentioned thing, you know, Easter eggs and this and that. And it's like, oh, it was mentioned in the movie. It counts. And so I feel like that was there for a lot of the really hardcore Star Wars fans. They're going to enjoy that first hour a lot more. And there's a few cool things that happen. Maybe around the 45-minute mark, it does start ramping up the action, and then just your average moviegoer can just sit there and enjoy it visually and see Darth Vader wielding his lightsaber and everything. And so from that perspective, I'd give it like an 8.5. So there were flaws, but I thought overall it was pretty good. It definitely got better as it went along. It probably could have been a little better paced. Maybe start off with a little more action and then and I know this has been done to death doing the whole flashback thing, but it might have helped with the pacing a little bit. Might have made the first hour not seem so slow had we got a little bit of action and then Jyn dreaming, they had that one real short dream sequence remembering back to when her father was captured, or maybe even mention her father, he's building a weapon, show a little bit of that, something along the lines of that, a little bit of action, and then go back and see her father. Might have even made the character a little more sympathetic, because had you seen him as this Imperial weapons designer first, maybe you don't have that much sympathy, and then it flashes back and you see him, his wife killed, his daughter has to be sent away, and he's basically kidnapped to go work for the Empire. I mean, he still ended up as a sympathetic character in the end, I think, but I don't know, just a different way they could have gone. What are your thoughts, Mark? Initial impressions and rating?
I'm going to be a little more fanboyish, just to a certain extent. I'm going to say an 8.
Okay.
I thought it was clearly better than 1, 2, 3. And I'm going to absolutely positively give you the first 45 minutes to say, okay, when are we getting to something that's relevant? And the whole, and we'll get into the casting in a few minutes, because I'll have a few sports opinions on that one. But I went into it realizing, look, this is not canon. And you may see some characters that really don't have anything to do with current. And if you look at it, the only three characters that you see for the briefest moments are the princess and the droids. Everybody else, to a certain extent, excepting Darth Vader, of course, is kind of off to the wayside. The addition of Tarkin, I think, was great. I don't necessarily agree, and again, we're going to get into a few minutes, that his visual appearance was the greatest. I thought the princess was a great addition, and there's differences between the two. Once everything started ramping up, the Death Star actually being turned up and destroying pieces of a planet, etc., I could have done without a few of the characters. But overall, I went in as a Star Wars fanboy. It was delivered. And I think it's a great foundation for a lot of the expanded universe, if that's still the term, for a good foundation. And just moving forward, not real 100% sure that if the vision was there, but I had a good time. It was dark. It did bring back memories of Empire Strikes Back and just the whole, the Empire is evil. And the Empire has the reach to do whatever it wants to do. But there was a few gaps in the stories. But from a moviegoer perspective, and if you took the Star Wars name out for me and say you went and saw this movie, it'd be about a 6. But the sheer fact that they were telling a story that eventually morphed into or derived the entire, starting with episode 4, jumping in the Tantive IV and running over Tatooine, then that's what hooked me in.
All right, fair enough. So, overall impressions of Rogue One as it fits into the Star Wars universe. There was that thing that Manny mentioned, and something that I wasn't I don't watch a lot of trailers anymore. I just don't. I used to be really into movies and go see every movie that came out and be watching the trailers and knew all the release dates. Honestly, it's not a conscious choice to move away from that. It's just a matter of I don't have the time. It's not where my focus is these days. So I hadn't seen a lot of the trailers. You know, I'd seen bits and pieces here or there. And so maybe because of that reason, I didn't really think about it. It wasn't until somewhere between about halfway or three quarters through when it kind of something just clicked in my head and I realized, hey, everybody has to die. All these main characters have to die because... And then it went back to the whole choice of Marvel Comics deciding to put their latest series in between episodes 4 and 5. This movie takes place between movies 3 and 4. And so it's like, you know where everybody is at the end of episode 3. You know where everybody is and who the characters are in episode 4. These people don't show back up. I think they're going to have to kill everybody. And so that was an interesting realization for me to make. As far as them calling it a Star Wars anthology and not having a lot of the same people fit in, I do agree with Manny, and maybe it is a little bit of a function of the story. There wasn't any real force wielders in it other than Darth Vader. So that felt a little lacking. Yeah, maybe it's just missing a little bit of the feel, the grandeur, kind of the magic of Star Wars. But I thought it was a well-made movie. You know, yeah, correct. It did have some flaws, and I think that's a lot to do with what is lacking in the first three. It's not that they're bad stories or bad ideas necessarily, but for me, episode 1, 2, and 3 are just poorly made movies, especially from editing and plotting standpoints. This is not that. Yeah, were there some holes in the story? Yeah, I mean, you kind of wonder, like, this is the future, and why are they still storing data on hard disks, and why do they have to go to this planet to get it? And if they knew this weapons base depot, weapons development factory existed on this planet, and at the drop of the hat, with almost no preparation, they're able to go and wipe out this weapons factory, then why didn't they just do that? As soon as they found out, you know, so you can't think about it too much. And the real thing that it made me think about is the fact, and this has been said a lot by a lot of people, not just me, is that Star Wars is really a fantasy story. It just happens to be set in space. It's not like hardcore science fiction, you know. It's not real techie. You know, even Star Trek, as much as that's fantasy, has more tech. And you know, they never spend any time in Star Wars talking about how they're able to travel faster than light or how, you know, they have laser rifles and guns and stuff like that. It's not where the focus is. And so I'm able to overlook some of those things that don't really, you know, make much sense. They're able to build a weapon that can destroy whole planets, but they can't have data storage that's more, you know, put it up in the cloud. It should be like some kind of universe cloud, right? It's like clearly safe and completely encrypted, and even if it was stolen, could never be cracked. So I was able to overlook that and just enjoy it as a Star Wars movie. And where it fits in the Star Wars universe is going to be interesting going forward. They have some more of these anthology films planned, and I don't think necessarily that they're going to nail them down as much as this one was, just because the plot, the story here fit. You know, they chose to tell this story, and it was actually the visual effects guy. I can't think of his name off the top of my head, but he's the one that did a lot of the CGI. He did all the CGI for the first three, all the prequels, did the CGI for episode 7, and now this. He's an Academy Award winning CGI guy, works for Industrial Light and Magic. This was his idea of story.
Ben Burt.
Yeah, that's it. And so it's interesting he came up with this idea. Clearly, this is very much tied in because it's stealing the plans. And then you watch episode 4, here's the plans, here's the weakness. And that was cool, right? Because you've heard so many times, or I've heard so many times, people say, oh, the problem with the first Star Wars is they build this thing, and why would it have this little exhaust port? And, you know, I've heard people say that, oh, it's the future. But they actually factor that in. Oh, they, you know, Jin's father actually put it in on purpose. So I thought that was really cool. So yeah, being that this tied in so well for this first anthology, I think Disney and Lucasfilm are trying to kind of feel it out. Let's see how it goes. Because going forward, if they do a Ben Kenobi, if they do a Han Solo, I don't think those are going to be so clearly like, okay, well, this is happens exactly between episode 1 and 2, or this happens exactly between episode 2 and 3, or 3 and 4. You know, it's not. I don't think they're going to tie in so closely. But as I said earlier, I do worry that we might get an oversaturation of Star Wars films, and then it's not as special. So,
what do you mention? You mentioned Han Solo, and that particular is coming out, what, I think 2018.
That's the tentative date.
Yeah, tentative. And the thing that I'm hoping is that they don't try to insert it into something that they already have, because frankly, you cannot replicate Harrison Ford's charisma in 4, 5, 6. Agreed. And you don't. He doesn't appear in 1, 2, 3, 7. He's a former shadow of himself to a certain extent. But if they go back far enough, I think that may be really interesting.
Yeah, and he actually wanted to be killed off in episode 6.
No, absolutely. Yeah.
And didn't get his wish, and then the only way he would agree to come back for 7 was if he just wanted mm-hmm. to have. So do you have any other thing you want to mention, Mark, as far as where your impression as Rogue One fits into the rest of the Star Wars universe?
I think Rogue One answered a lot of the questions that I had as a kid. Well, who stole the plans? How do they get the plans? This is the Empire. You know, and to a certain extent, on a very lesser scale, it answered the questions of an 8-year-old. Maybe not very well, but it still answered the questions. And it was a good movie. And I enjoyed it. And unfortunately, though, it's not one of those. It's just crosses that line where I don't think I can take a 5-year-old and 7-year-old where 4, 5, 6, to a certain extent, even 1, 2, 3, maybe 1, 2, I could take a 7-year-old or an 8-year-old.
Right.
And
yeah, this one was a little dark.
Still, yeah, this one was dark. And, you know, when we talked about it at lunch, look, guys, this is dark. Because I was the first one to see it amongst the group. But I had a good time. And I look forward to seeing some of the anthologies. I really do hope they get into my favorite character, which is Boba Fett. And we'll see.
Every time I hear someone talk about Boba Fett or Return or whatever, I always think of the Patton Oswalt scene where he filibuster. He talks about him crawling up out of the Sarlacc pit. Something you mentioned that was interesting I wanted to comment on is you talked about wondering how they got the plans and everything. I never spent that much time thinking about it, but I do remember at different times, different viewings of Star Wars, thinking, well, if they could get the plans, then it seems like they could have sabotaged the thing, you know? Like, you didn't think about everything that came into getting the plans, you know? Mm-hmm. So it was kind of a great idea to actually, okay, let's place a movie that is between 3 and 4 that's about how they get the plans, and it kind of dovetails nicely because we're going to make it the fact that getting the plans was such a dangerous mission that, in fact, it was a suicide mission, and all these main characters aren't going to make it, and then it ends up making perfect sense that they don't show up later because they all sacrifice themselves to get the plan. So in that way, it fits in perfectly. Mm-hmm. What about you, Manny? What are your thoughts about how Rogue One fits overall into the Star Wars universe?
It's, it worked for me in the sense that after I was done with the film, the next morning, the first thing I did was pop in episode 4 to kind of continue going for the rest of the morning. So in that way, I was like, oh, well, at least it did that for me. But it was just the fact that we had those, I guess you can call them legacy characters that showed up, that kind of put it all together for me. When Leia showed up briefly, when you briefly saw the droids, I forgot what species he is, the pig faced guy that they run into.
Walrus man.
Yeah. And then obviously Darth Vader, you know, that it really, kind of like, oh, I got you a little bit excited. But other than that, just the fact that you kind of knew that nobody was really going to make it. It just kind of took me out of it. I know of three people, I'm not exaggerating, that fell asleep while watching that movie. Wow. And I was quite surprised. Yeah. So
there are.
It's almost. I feel like there's other stories to tell. Like everybody's reaction to Darth Vader, almost kind of, and also the Marvel books with the Darth Vader stories, makes me feel that maybe we should have a Vader movie. You know, what's he doing? What's he doing off camera? Introduce, you know, the character that they introduce in Dr. Aphra, who's becoming in a very interesting character in the Star Wars Marvel Comics universe. That to me would be a better story than what we saw here, because no one would necessarily have to die. They can just go off their own ways. But in this case, it was just about getting the plans. You knew they were going to get them. And, you know, yeah, sitting there, I was kind of wondering why such a techno, you know, you can build a Death Star, but you got to keep all your plans on, you know, 1990s hard disks.
I will agree with you on a Darth Vader movie, and I'll even concede Dr. Aphra, who I can kind of take her or leave her. She's not my favorite. But if you do that, I will definitely go and see it if it's got 000 and BT-1.
Yes, 000. That's what I was going
to
say.
Absolutely got such an evil
droid.
And I'm at a loss because I'm not the comic book reader.
I'm going to have to hook you up with the Darth Vader series, Mark. It is exceptional. That moves us right into the next topic. Biggest flaws in the film or things we wish they'd done differently. I think, for me, one of the flaws actually pertains to Vader. And, Manny, you may agree with me here. Specifically the scene where he's talking to the guy that's in charge. I can never remember his name. The guy that's in charge of the Death Star originally, the one with the white uniform. I never heard Vader string so many words together. Very much channeling Hayden Christensen as Anakin at that point. In all the other movies, Vader's like 3 and 4 word sentences, and it's just. But here he's talking in these long, compound sentences. I noticed it. So just the fact that I noticed it pulled me out of the film a little bit. And then also the characterization. And we were talking about this earlier today, Mark. So you have Vader as he originally appeared in A New Hope, Episode 4, very menacing, but not necessarily the main bad guy, in as much as he's Tarkin's tool. You know, he's Tarkin's pit bull. He's on Tarkin's leash, but he still comes across as a complete badass, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then we have this comic series that has now become canon, and it's why I had a problem with the Vader series to begin with. He's much more subdued. He's much less confident. He's much more unsure of himself when that series starts. And he, as the series goes on throughout the 25 issues, he grows into the Vader that we all know as being this really scary guy. And so I'm just seeing because the whole Star Wars universe and with multimedia and everything, it's jumping around and we're moving around through timelines. Characterizations are they're not flowing necessarily as they should. You know, you're seeing different growth arcs of the character based on what media you're reading. And so that, it was something I was aware of in the movie. So the Vader we saw in this movie was a little less sure of himself, was a little less confident, and I think that and that's fine if that's the way they wanted to portray him, and that's why he felt he needed more words, because the Vader in A New Hope and the Vader of Empire Strikes Back, he's a man of few words because his actions speak for him, and it makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. But it's just looking at overall, okay, so now all of a sudden A New Hope, the characterization there doesn't make as much sense. And that bothers me a little bit, just because that's the classic one. That's my favorite one. He's less sure here. He's less sure in the events that happen in canon after A New Hope. And so it's kind of hard to reconcile. So that bothered me a little bit. The other thing that bothered me, and Mark, you mentioned it earlier, it was Tarkin specifically. I didn't think Leia, like most people seem to think Leia looked really good. I thought Leia looked like a Kewpie doll. She looked pretty fake, but it obviously worked a lot better because you look at 20-year-old Carrie Fisher and her face, you know, she's got light-colored skin, you know.
God bless her.
Very, you know, porcelain complexion, very smooth, not a lot of texture. And so CG, that kind of countenance lends itself to CGI much more than Tarkin, who's older and he's got wrinkles and he's got stubble and his face is much more craggy, and so it's harder to render. And so yeah, every time he was on, and it, this is the thing, like it didn't look so fake that I could just go, that looks fake, and then kind of just accept it. It just looked off enough that I couldn't help but keep focusing on it to be like, okay, right, what is it about it that doesn't look right? It kept drawing my eye because it was so close, but it was just like just enough to make it weird. Whereas if it had just been like totally like Looney Tunes animation straight out of Space Jam, if it had been like that, you know, just completely animated, it could have just been like, okay, whatever, he's a cartoon guy. I kind of wish they'd done the same thing they did with Mon Mothma, which is just get an actor that looks similar and just, you know, insert, right?
Well, if there's another actor that looks like Peter Cushing at that age, the only thing I can say is poor bastard.
Well, but that's the thing. They could have made him look at... There's no definite timeline. You know, they could have said, oh, this is 4 or 5 years before... they did end up choosing to have this movie end right before Episode 4 starts, but they didn't necessarily have to do that, you know. And
well, frankly, in which you just should, I think it's one of the best parts.
Yes, that's true. I will agree with you there, but they still could have done that, and it could have been seeing Tarkin earlier, and then you could have had time go on, or it could have just been, hey, you do the best you can, and that's just it. You know, Peter Cushing's dead. What are you going to do? I watched a little like 8 or 10 minute video on YouTube about the way they did the CGI, the way that kind of CGI works. Most expensive CGI ever in the history of
exactly
was just doing Tarkin, most time consuming, blood, sweat, tears. They start with the wireframe, they get an actor or an actress that looks very much like the original. And the first time this was specifically done this way was Fast and the Furious 7 after Paul Walker unfortunately passed away and they got his brothers to stand in. And so you get somebody that's really close, like facial structure is very close, the shape of the face, shape of the eyes, cheekbones, all that stuff. And then it's a lot easier to wireframe on to that face to get the proper animation because their faces will move in similar ways. And so they showed pictures of the guy they got to do Cushing, who I can't remember the guy's name, but he played the head of the Ministry of Magic in the last two Harry Potter films, which I'm not a Harry Potter guy, but that's what they meant he's most known for. And they did show a picture. He did look like a younger Peter Cushing, so that worked. And they got some Swedish actress who looked a lot like 20-year-old Carrie Fisher, who hasn't hardly been in anything, to do Carrie Fisher, but again, so much easier just based on her complexion and not having to have a lot of texture. So I think for me, those were the two biggest flaws. Were there other plot holes? Yes, of course, but you know, it's a movie and you kind of accept it for that. I didn't necessarily have a problem with the first hour, 45 minutes to an hour. I know some people did, but I was fine with that because I just kind of took it as, yeah, they are trying to do some world building, some universe building, so they can, you know, spin off into other things. So, you know, I found it interesting. I don't necessarily think that Forrest Whitaker was the best choice for Saul Guerrera, but Forrest Whitaker's a good actor, but he needs to be in certain kind of roles, and I kind of feel like he was wasted here. I think that somebody else could have done more with the smaller part. Painfully aware of the entire, every time he's on screen, that this is Forrest Whitaker trying to act like a Star Wars character, not just rather than saying, oh, look, this is Saul Guerrera. But I thought that Felicity Jones did an incredible job. I don't know the guy's name that played the captain, but I thought he did a good job as well. Would have liked to have seen a little more of his background. It's just briefly mentioned. I'm sure that they'll do a comic or a book or something that fleshes that out. And I also liked my boy Alan Tudyk. I thought K2 was incredible. So, what did you think the biggest flaws were, Mark?
The biggest flaw, obviously, to me was Tarkin. But one of the things that I'm the most glad that they did was Tarkin. You know, and it just goes to show again that CGI is not quite there. But, you know, perusing the internet, looking at some of the quote unquote professional reviewers, and they say, well, he looked like he stepped out of Polar Express. Well, Polar Express is pretty good to me. I do think they probably could have put him back a little bit and put him in the shadows and do all of that sort of good stuff. But the sheer fact that they put him face first into the lens and tried to pull the audience in, I applaud that. I really do. I like the fact that they humanized Vader to a certain extent with that scene in the back to tank. If you go back to Empire Strikes Back, when you know the helmet's coming on, you see the disfigured back of his head. I thought that may have been a little too much, but at the same time, I also said, okay, they're reminding the audience that at this point, he's still a human being, mostly. When it goes back to Vader again, you were talking about how his, from the comics, from canon, he develops. And so I kind of looked at it and said, okay, from the end of episode 3 to Rogue One, strictly based on Leia's age, is about 20 years. And that's just me throwing out a number, that you would think he would be a little bit more confident, a little bit more badass. I could have done without the whole pun when he was doing the force choke. You know, don't choke yourself or whatever he said. Whatever. And let's remember that every character who's ever been force choked in the movies and are now dead, character wise. It was like, whatever. But turning the table on that, the last, and JC and I talked about this, the last 5 minutes, and I called it, there was finally some badassery with that character. You know, and him standing in the shadows, and the next thing you know, you see the red lightsaber, and then you see him mow through a dozen soldiers, and just how close the plans were in his hands, and just how that irritated him. I thought that was brilliantly done. And it was good to see that, because let's face it, the last time we saw Darth Vader, he was yelling no, strapped to a table. So I look at it like that. I agree with you, the Forrest Whitaker. I am not a fan of Forrest Whitaker, and that's at the personal level, which I'll leave at that. The casting of Felicity Jones was great. The casting of Mads Mikkelsen as Dr. Erso was a little confusing to me, because every time I looked at him, I was looking at him. I said, I'm looking at Hannibal Lecter. So I had tried to get away from that. That was a little confusing casting. The casting of Mon Mothma was great. I liked the fact that the canon droids made a quick appearance, and that was it. And again, going back to Alan Tudyk and K2, just the lines that he said were just spot on. And reading over time on how he developed the character, and the fact that he was in one of the body motion capture suits throughout the filming, just even more goes to say he knows what he's doing.
Quiet! And there's a fresh one if you mouth off again.
There you go. <couldn't resist. laughs> My favorite line was, I'm here for you, Jen, because I was basically because I was told to. So, but I had a good, that was a good character. I was really kind of hoping, and you're right, I cannot remember his name, but who was in charge of the Death Star construction before Cushing or before Tarkin. I was kind of hoping that would be Grand Admiral Thrawn. I was introduced to that character years ago, and then, of course, he's resurfaced in Star Wars Rebels recently. But I think that's a great character that needs to be explored. But, you know, that's my two cents.
Yeah, I think the line is don't choke on your ambition.
Yeah.
Sure, you don't choke. All right, Manny, what about you? What are your biggest? I mean, you've already mentioned many, many flaws that you didn't think you didn't like. What's the biggest? What's the glaring one for you?
My biggest one is on how much the movie kind of needed all of the cameos to really take it over the top. Because if there's a one thing that I keep having people talk about, it's Vader, Vader, Vader. And it's not really about the actual story or any of the new characters. If anything, the one character that people were really happy for was K2SO, which I would agree, because, you know, he had some of the more memorable lines in the movie. the guy who played Cassian Andor, Diego Luna, he's one of my favorite actors. So I was really enjoying his acting, because I just like his movies. He has some very good films, Mexican films, and so that was. But it's just really how much how many cameos and things like that, and you know enough to, I guess, satisfy people, but maybe you should have spent a little more time, like you guys had mentioned before. I would have also liked to see a little bit more of when Jin was younger, and maybe in the background, kind of seeing some of her father's hardships in developing the Death Star, or, you know, maybe some back and forth with some of the other generals or anybody above him about certain things and things like that, to maybe get me a little bit more invested in the beginning. And so, yeah, just things like that. But I think the thing that mostly bothered me is the lack of force that you know, Donnie Yen's character really tried to shove down our throat. But it was different. It wasn't Obi-Wan Kenobi saying, "Luke, use the force." You know, just very, very subtle, but enough to know that it's something in the air. Something. It's an aura. It's you know, it's real. It just didn't feel that way in this film. In that sense, I felt that it was different. Yeah, and I would agree with Mark. If it doesn't have that Star Wars brand, you know, how good of a film is it really? So, you know, and it is what it is. We're going to keep getting these films. I just really, really hope that when you're focusing on some of the younger characters in future movies, you know, you don't screw it up too much by trying to, like you also said, put it all together. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be just connected enough, keep it its own entity, and just expand the universe in that way.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think if it's not a Star Wars movie, though, then you probably do get more of the things that maybe we're asking for. I mean, because then probably you don't need the whole first hour of the movie.
Correct.
So, I mean, it's kind of having to balance between the people that are, you know, these mega Star Wars fans. You have to at some point acknowledge the fact that you've had people that are fans of this, and like generationally, like, you know, they went and saw it when they're very small, and now they're taking their kids to see these movies, and they've stuck with it, and they've you know, invested time and everything. You've got to give them something. And so it is a tough balance to do that versus you still want to... I mean, it's the same challenge in comics, right, Manny? You have to have something for the longtime fan, but you're always constantly trying to get new fans so that it can continue. So I do understand what you're saying, and I don't necessarily disagree with it, but it is... I just recognize that it's a hard thing to do.
But you know, the one thing I think that kind of bugs me about the whole way that it approach. I understand that, you know, when you bought it kind of obviously to make money, but these films, they've come out so periodically, you know, it kind of makes them that much more special. For example, I you know, the excitement when The Phantom Menace came out, and thus the other films shortly after, although they were very, very not well received. But then, you know, you wait so many years later, and you have The Force Awakens, you do not see that level in any film because of how long you've waited. It's a gem. It's rare. It's something mm-hmm. really, really special. And I'm really afraid that you keep releasing all these films, you're kind of going to water it down a little bit. Not to say that you're going to lose anyone or anything, because that's never going to happen. But I feel that it might lose that how special it is. Because I love Star Wars fine, but when I was sitting there watching The Force Awakens and that John Williams scored, hit the speakers. I mean, it's a ride,
Right.
So I would hate for it to lose any of that going forward, because you're trying to have so many films and sell so many toys, and now you have a theme park coming out.
Right.
So,
and actually that's something I just wanted to mention, was that listening to the soundtrack and listening to the score, whoever the conductor was, I can't remember, I don't know his name. He basically took the John Williams score and then adapted it to what he wanted to do. And frankly, I was like, why are you changing this? At a certain point, there was the Imperial March and it didn't sound right. And I can understand somebody wanting to take it as their own, but for me, I'm like 47 years old, going back to 8, you don't monkey with that. But again, that's just splitting hairs at this point.
Michael Giacchino is his.
There you go. Thank you.
To speak to what you were saying, Manny, I was actually talking about that very exact same thing before you came on. I was saying that it would have been interesting, because there was such a big gap between the last new Star Wars movie released, which was, I guess, would be Episode 3, versus when 7 came out. What if you'd flipped it, right? Because I didn't feel like there was anywhere near the hype or the anticipation for Rogue One as there was for Episode 7. But it would have been interesting to see if they had done Rogue One first. So if Rogue One had come out last year, I think there would have been more hype and more excitement, because it would have been the first Star Wars movie in a really long time. Episode 7 may not have had as much hype if it had been the movie to come out December 2016, but I still think it would have had more hype than Rogue One did, just because it was a return of Luke Skywalker, Princess Leia, Han Solo. So I think if they'd flipped him, it might have been better. But, of course, the powers that be at Disney probably thought, well, we better do Episode 7 first and prove that we can make a good Star Wars movie. Because there was that worry, when Disney first bought Lucasfilm, when you saw all the pictures of Darth Vader with
right.
Mickey Mouse ears, and people were worried that they were going to really screw it up. So, it's interesting to speculate, but if there's anything we know, it's that Disney loves their franchises. Pirates of the Caribbean, they're going to beat it till it's dead completely. and so I do, I do worry that it's going to be over.
And I will watch every one of them.
Yeah, unfortunately, I will too.
And so we've talked about this already, but I'm going to bring it up again just for the sake of argument. And something else we talked about at lunch, too. One of our other coworkers, John, mentioned that. Shout out to John. He's probably going to listen to this.
grumpy old man.
His opinion was, we didn't see them die. We just saw a big light.
Yeah.
Speaking of Jin and Cassius. For all we know, that was a ship coming to rescue him at the last minute. And he's right. We didn't see any bodies. And I actually had read an article about the director saying that originally he had them living, and he didn't really think that that made sense, and so they changed it, and he was worried the whole entire time that once they changed the ending to have everybody die, that Disney was going to come to him and say, no, that's too dark, we got to show them on a living out the rest of their time in peace or something. Maybe they're
rainbows and unicorns.
Maybe they got really injured or something. Maybe they're trapped on that planet, can never leave, whatever. But they didn't end up doing that. But we didn't really see them die. So John's contention is they can bring it back. They can do whatever they want. They can bring it back. And it's like comics. No one's ever really dead. They can do whatever they want, really. But in my mind, they're dead. And it makes sense that they would be so. Because, again, I just think that if they were this important and they were able to do this incredibly dangerous mission of retrieving the plans and they survived, there's no way the rebellion would have just left them alone somewhere. They would have been like, no, you're two of our best people. We really, really need you. As far as Donnie Yen's character, Chirrut, the blind guy, I know he had to die also because he's such a great character. Why wouldn't he have shown up? I mean, it made sense. The Imperial pilot, the defected, I didn't really care one way or the other about him. And then the guy with the automatic laser rifle, Baze. I thought he was an interesting character, but and the priest, Chirrut, as soon as they appeared, you kind of knew they were the kind of characters that are they're like almost red shirts, if you will. You just know they're not gonna. So I do think personally, just for the sake of continuity, that all the main characters did need to be killed. I just think that it worked better that way. It made a lot more sense to me logically. Your thoughts, Mark?
Well, you know, John and I, being the grumpy old men in the office, will come to blows eventually one day. they all had to die. This was a suicide mission. And anybody from a rational perspective that put boots on the ground going after an Imperial stronghold that just went through, you know, everybody had to die. As for John's assertion of they could still be alive and all of this sort of good stuff, to me, Rian Johnson, who's the director, he borrowed a page out of one of those disaster movies. What was it, Day After Tomorrow or something, where's this tidal wave of a tidal wave headed to the beach, and Tia Leone and I want to say Morgan Freeman of all people were standing.
That's Deep Impact.
Deep Impact.
Yeah.
So they're sitting there. I mean, these people are standing there. The tidal wave is coming. We did not see a body, but clearly they're going to die.
Yes.
That's the way I took it. So I think these characters are past. God bless them. All that sort of good stuff. And let's move on.
Manny, your thoughts?
Yeah, everybody had to die, because you can't have characters with you know, such great you know, because you're going to be asking questions of where are they, what happened to them,
such a big impact on the rebellion.
Yeah,
and then just
especially someone like a Cassian Andor or a Jyn. It's like, what happened to them? Where did they go? Even unfortunately, K2SO, he had to go because he became a great part of the movie. So yeah, they all had to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and in fact, Star Wars gets one Mexican in the damn movie, and they kill him off.
I think that even beyond them needing to go, because it doesn't make sense, they would have showed up in later movies. It even, when you think about it, it doesn't even really make sense that they're never mentioned by name. And it's obvious why. I mean, right? This movie is made in 2016, or made to be released in 2016. Star Wars was made to be released in 1977. Clearly, they had no idea. But from just a story and a continuity and a logical standpoint, these heroic characters would have been mentioned by name at some point in the subsequent movies, right? Just because, you know, maybe at some time when the chips are down, they're like, hey, remember the sacrifice of Jyn Erso and Cassian Andor. You know, it just, you would think that would have had these been made in, you know, chronological order. Clearly that's not the case, but yeah, I think they, for that reason, they all had to die. Favorite moment, Manny?
Favorite moment. I'm gonna have to say, how about just our introduction to K2SO, because
he stole the show for you.
For me, yeah. I mean, and for a few minutes, I forgot it was Alan Tudyk. I hope that sometime during Con Man, we get a little reference.
Yeah, hopefully that'll be cool. What about you, Mark? Favorite role? I think I know, but I'll let you have the pleasure.
We talked about it today. Hands down, Red Lightsaber Goes On and Darth Vader Badassery. That's it. That was it for me.
Yeah, that was really, I mean, just the fact that it was so dark and then that glow.
Right.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Brilliantly done. Brilliantly done.
For me, I mean, the little moment of that I played earlier with K2 smacking Cassian was cool. I really enjoyed the line of cheer when they put the bag over his head. He's like so incredulous. You like, why the hell are you putting a bag over my head? I'm blind. That was really cool. But I think I'm gonna go a little sappy.
We have hope. Rebellions are built on hope.
I'll go with Jin's speech, just because it tied in so well, you know, especially being that they ended up renaming Star Wars Episode 4 to A New Hope. Mm-hmm. And so I just thought that showed, in my mind, that's the beginning of the rebellion. Yeah, yeah. They're resisting. Yeah, they're not completely falling under the rule of the Empire, but being that they couldn't agree on much and they were saying one thing in the conference room and then another, like when Cassian Superior, you know, he says, yeah, we're going to go capture Erso, and then he walks out there and tells him, yeah, we're not capturing him. If you get a chance, then you
need, take it.
Yeah, if you get a chance, then you just need to kill him, right?
Yeah.
And so clearly not everybody's on the same page, and it's, I mean, is it really a rebellion, or is it just kind of a group of people that are kind of hanging out and they just happen to have the same goals, right? I mean, because that's kind of a big deal. Like, you're saying, okay, go capture Galen Erso. Okay, go kill him. That, I mean, especially when you're using his daughter to try to accomplish the mission in the first place. And so for me at that moment, and especially when Cassian and his crew come to join Jin and say, okay, let's go and do this. That's, to me, that's like the real start of the rebellion. And so I'll give my nod to that for mm-hmm. a favorite moment.
That's good.
Now, we've kind of talked about this already too. Like, where should or where does Disney take Star Wars from here? Manny and I both mentioned worried about diluting it down. So where does it go? Do you think they should focus on continuing the story and telling it, you know, more linear? So with Episode 8, Episode 9, or should it be? Because I think tentatively what their plan is they're going to alternate, right? They're going to do one of the continuing story. So Episode 8, Episode 9, but they're going to intersperse that with these anthology tales where it's flashback, it's history, it's fleshing out, or some could even be maybe in the current, you know, concurrent with the more linear tale, but just other tales of not the main characters. As far as I'm concerned, I think that plan is okay, alternating, but I still think that there shouldn't be a Star Wars movie every year. I think they should take their time, make sure they really have the best story possible, because as much as I complained about Tarkin not looking correctly, it's not, bad CGI and bad special effects aren't going to be, and bad acting aren't going to be a reason people stay away from Star Wars. They're going to stay away from Star Wars, or it's going to start to lose its specialness and its magic because the stories are weak. And because they're coming out too frequently. I think those are the two biggest dangers. So for me, every other year, ideally every 3 years, but I know Disney's way too greedy for that. So I think every other year, alternate between a Star Wars anthology tale and a main Star Wars tale, personally, is where I think Disney, the direction Disney should take. What do you think, Mark?
Ditto. We have Rogue Squadron. We have Episode 8 next year, probably Han Solo in 2018. And then Episode 9. And Episode 9, to me, is going to be a big one because that's the end of the known canon of trilogies that goes back to Lucas's days. And it's well known that, you know, Lucas presented 7, 8, and 9 to Disney, and Disney tossed it out. And that's just, when you sell something, you're not going to get what you want. You know, Jace, you and I work for a restaurant company that, you know, when we run out of something, we run out of something, and you always say, well, why did they run out of it? It must have been that good. Don't saturate the market. So if you run out of something, then, and you need to recook it or you need to remake it, great. And again, I would love as a fan, I would love every year, but as a preservationist, I would love to say every 3 years, stop, get it right, get the mystique build up, you know, film it whenever you want to. Drop a trailer out a year and a half before anything, you know, and, you know, whet the appetite. And that's more marketing to me. But in this whole year after year thing, I'm okay with it until 2019. And by that time, I'll be 50. God help me. And then, you know, if I have one movie every 3 years, I'll be happy.
What are your thoughts, Manny? Where should or does Disney take Star Wars from here?
You know, put the focus on the theme park or, you know, something like that, comic books or TV shows, but leave the movies alone for a little bit. Kind of same thing as you guys are saying, you know, let the mystique build. Probably the best line that I heard tonight is because you want to be excited for those films because, you know, it's fun. It's great because it works for all ages. If anything that, you know, Episode 7 proved was that it's timeless and that it can be enjoyed by people of all ages. And, you know, different generations can enjoy Star Wars. But you start oversaturating the market and you start losing interest because, yeah, well, it's another one came out again. And then it turns into some of these other franchises that don't know when to stop. Not going to mention any names because I'm not going to put them in the same breath as Star Wars.
I'll just say it for you, Pirates of the Caribbean.
No, not Pirates of the Caribbean.
That's the one for me.
Twilight.
I just couldn't. I just couldn't anymore.
Transformers.
Oh,
let it die. Oh, please. Thank you very much.
In fact, when I was sitting in the theater last night, that was one of the trailers they put on, and I had to immediately post on Facebook, Why are they still making these movies? I love Transformers when I was a kid. I had a lot of the toys. I love the cartoon. I love the comic. I've never seen a Transformers movie, and I never will, because for me, it just, that's not something that I want to see. I don't want to see. It's just not going to be good. Mm. Especially when you put Michael Bay, who, for his movies, are great on visual eye candy and short on story.
Michael Bay needs to make a Cyborg movie.
Amen to that one. Yeah. How many times can we reboot Spider-Man?
Well, one more until time. Marvel gets the rights back. All right, well, I think that's going to wrap it up. Either of you have any other comments on Rogue One?
Bottom line, I had a good time. I don't think it's canon, but I think it comes pretty close. But I love the character. Finally, you know, again, and Jason and I talked about this. Finally, there's some character development. There's some characters you didn't like. There's some characters you did like. And then there's some characters, wow, I really wish I understood them more. And I thought that was brilliant.
Manny, anything to add?
Good, you know, it's a good movie. Overall, and you got to come out feeling happy that
your hard drive is probably a little bit more advanced than what they use for the Death Star plans.
Quote of the night right there by Manny. All right, once again, I'd like to thank everyone for joining us. Please visit us at thecomosourceblog.com for past episodes of the podcast. You can also watch episodes of our YouTube channel there, as well as finding links to Manny's written blog and my written blog, and of course, our famous sketch gallery. Please follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Also do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to keep up to date on new episodes and convention coverage. And don't forget, we have our partnership going with LRM. You can go to lrmonline.com to enjoy our new podcast, The Nine Panel Grid. We just released that yesterday as we're recording, and Manny and I talked about the latest previews catalog for books shipping in February. And we also gave our recommendations for some books and runs, comic books and runs, that if you're a new comic fan and you're trying to get into it as a hobby or something you want to enjoy on the weekends, it's kind of daunting, right? There's like, sometimes people feel like there's this huge barrier of entry. Where do I start? There's so many different books. So Manny and I give some recommendations on things that'll give you a good foundation, especially with Marvel and DC. So go check that out. The Nine Panel Grid is a comic book podcast. It's much more geared toward the beginning comic reader. New episodes come out every Tuesday, and we cover all kinds of topics. So go and check that out. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you next time. And thanks for joining us, Mark. We'll have to have you on again sometime.
My pleasure entirely.
All right. Take care, everybody.